Welcome to Focus on Fuels, brought to you by StoneX. Your hosts are Trevor McClanahan, Risk Manager, and Alex Hodes, Director of Market Strategy from the StoneX Energy Desk. Alex and Trevor help fleet managers, fuel buyers, and energy procurement specialists gain control of fuel costs, boost margins, and keep their businesses competitive. Join them for another deep dive into the volatile energy markets.
Remember that the trading of derivatives such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Focus on Fuels. My name's Alex Hodes, and I'm here with my colleague, Trevor McClanahan. How's it going, Trevor?
Good. How's it going, man?
Not too bad. So we figured we'd have to discuss kind of a few things that have been going on in the markets. The big U.S. election just occurred several weeks ago now, and its effects on the market have been somewhat surprising, in my opinion. Today is November 20th, and we're sitting here, and the oil market has really kind of dragged down a little bit after the election, and the market's still kind of digesting what this new administration will mean to the market. What are kind of some of the topics, or what's your kind of reaction to how the market has reacted thus far?
Definitely been a sentiment shift. A lot of the same, obviously, from an economic perspective. Production obviously hasn't changed anything. But more than anything, the Trump administration has, you know, throughout their entire campaign, they were drill, baby, drill was kind of the tagline, right? So we view that as, you know, a really good way of campaigning as a politician, of course. Everybody likes lower gas prices. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure that that's really going to really affect oil prices just directly. Trump administration can do only so much. And, you know, from the shale patch perspective, it still comes down to economics. What's the break-even cost of those guys? And, you know, they're going to be incentivized based off of however much money they can make on drilling. So, you know, with that being said, I think that it's going to take some time for this to develop. And there's been a lot of sideways action too. You know, it's been kind of a slow trickle down, if anything. And I think at the new year, once we get the Trump administration in there, we'll probably figure out a little bit more. It'll still take some digesting, though, through probably up until the early spring.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. It's kind of assumed that because the Trump administration will be more friendly to crude oil production, maybe reduce some environmental regulations, that we're going to see this explosion in crude production growth. But actually, when looking at the administration, so this time we kind of have prior knowledge to look at. So we looked at Trump's previous administration year-over-year crude production growth and compared that to the Biden administration year-over-year production growth average. And Biden's administration actually was in place for more growth than Trump. Obviously, Trump had COVID in there as well, but just to say that really the president in charge only has so many levers that he can pull, and really things that have been slowing down some of the shale patch growth we've talked about a little bit before, infrastructure issues in the Permian, specifically associated nat gas produced from those wells. I think really where we're going to see kind of the environmental regulations kind of take hold will be on the EV side. Of whether auto companies will have to meet those mandates that are already kind of difficult to reach. And in addition to that, there are some blending mandates that are in effect currently. And there's been kind of questions around whether those will stay in place come Jan 1. There's thought that perhaps Trump will kind of be a little bit more friendly to the farmers and more kind of friendly towards blending. And honestly, from a political perspective, that might be good because that gives him some goodwill in the case of an escalation of trade war where grains from the U.S. could be at the top of the list in terms of retaliation from China. But I think overall on the oil market side, the big factors are going to be Iran, and OPEC.
Yeah, geopolitics. I mean, that's definitely been what you said there too was, I don't want to misguide listeners by saying, I think your point by saying that the Biden administration did have more production was just to elaborate the point that the president doesn't matter that much, and it still comes down to economics, which is obviously the shale patches. It's going to be driven off of that. So higher crude prices is going to result in higher production. Lower crude prices is going to result in, you know, those guys are going to start tapering off some. So geopolitics kind of becomes the spotlight, in my opinion. And then, you know, like you said, Iran, the whole Russian conflict kind of escalating from here on. And then also big one is, you know, China demand as well. So we hinted a lot. We talked a lot about China demand, kind of what's next for them on the last episode. So I think today we want to zoom in a little bit more on Iran, OPEC, and kind of what the perspective is on that.
Yeah, so OPEC has really been kind of supporting the market. And in the meantime, we've seen Iran production growth. Iran actually, since 2022, has accounted for 50% of crude production growth to 2024. So, you know, we've heard all about the U.S. shale patch growing and Brazil growing and Guyana growing, but kind of the big elephant in the room has been Iran this whole time. And then kind of when there are escalations in the Middle East with Hamas being funded by Iran, I think this may be kind of an issue for the Trump administration, who was previously not particularly friendly towards Iran and kind of implemented these sanctions harshly. So there was a large drop in crude oil production last time from Iran. It was producing around, I want to say, 3.8 million barrels before Trump implemented the sanctions, and then fell down almost over 1.5 million barrels per day. So I don't think we see that precipitous of a fall this time. I think maybe 500,000, 600,000 barrels is at risk, because Iran's got really good at kind of evading those sanctions, or so it seems. And I think that any removal of supply here, and I think we've kind of talked about this in the past, is, you know, if I were president or if I were to kind of negotiate this in order to prevent a run-up in prices, because that's not really favorable for the American public either. You know, Trump was a little bit more friendly with Mohammed bin Salman last time he was in office. So maybe he calls his buddy up and they meet up and they say, hey, I'm going to shut down some of this Iranian crude oil production. Maybe you can open the taps up a little bit. And, you know, that's obviously, we're just kind of making guesses here. But from OPEC's perspective, they've been kind of delaying the return of these barrels, and perhaps it's been kind of to wait on the election. But yeah, that's, I mean, or at least that's maybe a piece in that decision making.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, Iran has immediately responded to the Trump win there by, you know, they pledged recently, like 2 days, I think, after Trump announced that he won, they immediately announced a pledge to cease stockpiling of uranium, enriched at least. So International Atomic Energy Agency inspectors verified that they did, in fact, reduce their production of that highly enriched nuclear fuel. So they're already taking action there. And I think that's interesting that they already know that the Biden administration was obviously taking a really soft stance on them, and they know what's coming next from the Trump cabinet. So I don't know that this is really going to smooth things over with the Trump administration, though. I think this is obviously they're strong arming them. So with that being said, I think that you know, I wouldn't take this and say that we're going to start seeing the Trump administration start pulling sanctions back, or I think they're still going to keep barreling forward with these, regardless of what Iran responds with, because the damage is already done.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what surprised me most about oil in the event after the election. You know, I almost figured there would be kind of a bid in oil, but instead it sold off immediately. I think a little bit of that was due to kind of the dollar strengthening, but you know, here we sit, we're still kind of moving sideways. And
sentiment, you know, yeah. I mean, the drill, baby, drill, it's sticking home. And we know, and I mean, from our perspective, that doesn't hold a lot of weight. But, you know, there is a lot of reason not to be bullish right now at the same time. You know, we're both, I think, our entire office, honestly, has just a lack of conviction in either direction. We really don't see a lot of upside risk, but we don't see a ton of downside. We see a lot of sideways action coming near term, especially until we kind of figure out more what's going to come from the Trump administration. So obviously that's important. We obviously got to see a lot what China is going to happen as well. And then, you know, with Russia too, I think that's a pretty big topic now. Monday, we've seen a huge gap up. From, you know, them announcing that they're going to, or the Biden administration announcing that they're going to use or allow Ukrainians to use Army tactical missile systems, basically the long range missile systems up to 190 miles. And Russia has, or Putin has repeatedly said that that would be the act of war, that the next step towards the West, you know, having aggression towards, or what the Russians view as aggression towards, directly towards Moscow. So what's going to come from that next? It's going to be interesting. But I don't know what to make of this as far as what Biden's motives were exactly. I don't know if that's important to oil necessarily, but, you know, it's interesting. And then what we're going to see next out of that, how Trump's going to deal with this, because it seems like they kind of, bump the hornet's nest, if you will, the Biden administration by doing this. And, you know, it might be harder for Trump to come in and smooth things over with.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, that's been one of the things that's kind of faded into the background. So it coming back to light is kind of interesting to see what, how, kind of the market reacted to that news. I think that kind of signals the readiness of market participants to kind of jump at some sign of geopolitical risk. So, because is there really going to be that much of a, even if that does escalate, is there going to be a change in flows? Or
it's almost already been proven that it doesn't affect things.
Yeah. So really, I'm not sure how much that actually has to do. Again, I think
further escalation, though, if Russia were to go into Poland or, you know, one of those other countries, that definitely would spook the market even more. And then that sentiment all of a sudden shifts. And, you know, you get algorithmic trading start to move the market up and just change the momentum of it. So, it doesn't probably directly affect supplies, though, or at least in our view, it might not immediately from what we can tell. But it definitely would shift the sentiment. And that's really been the driving force here recently.
Yeah. And I think that's probably just the thing is, like, we've been trading sideways for such a long time. And we saw the DOE released their latest inventory report as of mid-November. And it was kind of a nothing burger, to be honest. We saw things kind of come in line with seasonal shifts. But globally, this time of year, we do see kind of some drawdowns in inventory. So any strength that's interpreted by drawdowns in inventories globally should kind of be taken with a grain of salt, because this is kind of what's expected at this time of year. So I do think, you know, we'll see a little bit of a seasonal lift here in prices, but overall, there's just kind of that sideways trend. But
well, I was going to ask you, we're going to cover kind of the customer, what I'm hearing on the boots on the ground, my customers. But you came up with you had a really good article recently this week on diesel demand and kind of where that sits right now. Do you mind elaborating on that?
Yeah. Side? So, you know, we've heard this throughout this year and last year, honestly, is diesel demand is currently at a 10-year seasonal low. So although the economy has still been strong, particularly the consumer, the shift of, we've kind of gone full circle here, is like COVID, nobody was driving, everybody started purchasing goods, and then that led to this huge spike in diesel demand, and we stall, you know, gasoline shift to diesel demand, and then there was a massive run on diesel in 2022. I'm sure Trevor and all of his customers remember that very vividly.
Oh yeah.
And then after 23 and 24, we've really seen refining capacity globally just build up quite a bit. And diesel demand has been lagging, particularly out of China. So if you look at the U.S., you know, although the weekly data pointed to kind of a 10-year seasonal low, on the year-to-date diesel demand levels, we're still basically flat from last year. I thought something was interesting that the EIA, in their most recent report, their most recent short-term energy outlook, which is a monthly report that comes out, they pointed to a forecast for increased industrial activity in 2025, and they're expecting diesel demand to go up, which is kind of surprising in my opinion. They were kind of suggesting that lower interest rates might be the catalyst for that. But I think, you know, a move towards the administration, towards kind of more industrial heavy economy, perhaps that could be something that drives that. But currently we're not seeing diesel demand kind of coming out of the depths.
Yeah, I mean, and shifting that towards, you know, what my customers are seeing right now. Lack of demand, it's there. Lack of margin goes with that as well. You know, everybody's flush with product. Pretty much all regions are, you know, basis hasn't been very wild in any region necessarily. And that's, you know, showing that there's a really good supply pretty much throughout the entire country. So with that being said, margins are shrinking, and there's just not been a lot of appetite for like forward contracts, or you know, there's just a lack of direction and conviction in this market in general. So I think everybody just wants to kind of wait, sit back, see what the Trump administration is going to bring forward. There's a lot of this renewable fuel stuff that we're going to touch on next week, that and discuss a little bit more detail there. That's another big aspect of what the Trump administration's going to change things up. They're going to throw a wrench into things. So seeing what those are going to look like. And then, you know, I think that'll give a little bit more comfort towards just about all. I mean, the energy sector is big, you know, that's going to definitely drive people's opinions and sentiment moving forward.
And yeah, I think another thing that's been kind of lagging in terms of demand for diesel or heating oil on the East Coast is we haven't really seen heating demand tick up yet. So
yeah, and it's supposed to be a colder winter. So yeah, I mean, I think
colder than last year.
So probably back to the average, back to the mean a little bit, and so that'll be that should tick up heating oil demand some at least.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's something we'll have to discuss at a later date of kind of more heating fuel focus too, because propane specifically, we can kind of talk about that as well at a later date. But now I think we might need to focus in a little bit on more important topics. So we have Thanksgiving next week. We like to discuss food in this office, and I think it would be appropriate for us to kind of discuss favorites, least favorites about Thanksgiving food in general.
Yeah. I mean, I think you and I both agree the meats in general on Thanksgiving just aren't there for us. turkey just is not
there. Yeah, turkey is kind of trash.
The sides are always electric. And that's one thing I can definitely, my family actually has recently started a tradition of doing brisket on Thanksgiving, and I could not be more enthused, because I think everybody, at least it seems like the older folks, they seem to love the turkey and ham still. But our generation, for whatever it is, turkeys are in good shape. They got a good life ahead of them in the future.
Yeah, I think that is so. I'm going to my in-laws, and they always make a perfect turkey and ham. But even then, turkey just doesn't do it quite for me.
What's your favorite side? That's probably a better topic.
Love
the meats.
Yeah, I would say like we get some mac and cheese going.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Little stuffing action.
Sweet potato casseroles.
Yeah,
awesome. That's probably my go-to at least.
And then I get sweet potato souffle is actually really good too.
But then you just bank on there being enough gravy to make sure you don't choke on the turkey. At least when my dad makes it, it's a choking hazard.
Yes. You know? Yeah. And I think I'm going to still just keep planting the seed that maybe we need to try prime rib instead of a turkey. Maybe we need to smoke this turkey or deep fry a turkey.
Absolutely.
But I don't know. I mean, I'm not the one cooking it, so I guess I shouldn't complain.
That's true.
But so I think that'll probably wrap us up for this week's podcast. I think we're going to discuss a little bit more about renewables next time, and then maybe touch on heating fuels in the future. I hope all of you have a safe holiday and enjoy. Thanks for
And check out Alex's report on that, the diesel demand. That was a really good piece there. So if you're not getting all of our market intelligence stuff now, please send us an email, and we will start getting you guys, at least we have a trial program, so we can get you started on that to get things going. We have a morning brief that we send out daily. Would love any listeners to jump on that as well and, you know, stay in tune with what we have to say. So reach out anytime.
Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
You've been listening to the Focus on Fuels podcast with Trevor McClanahan and Alex Hose, brought to you by StoneX, NASDAQ ticker SNEX, a global Fortune 100 financial services company with a century of commodities risk management experience. Subscribe to Focus on Fuels on your preferred podcasting platform. For insights on managing fuel and energy price volatility, and to sign up for the free StoneX Morning Energy Brief newsletter, email focusonfuels@stonex.com or visit www.stonex.com. Please feel free to rate, review, and share this episode with colleagues. Until next time.